It's Saturday, the 11th of April, day 21. In his column in today's Financial Times, the economist Tim Hartford tells a story about a cafe in Berlin in the early 20th century, which had a waiter who was famous for his fabulous memory. No matter how large a group of diners was, or how complex their orders, this man could keep it all in his head. And then one day, so the story goes, someone left an overcoat behind. He hurried back to the cafe, only to find that the waiter didn't remember him. He was amazed by this sudden outbreak of amnesia. And then the chap calmly explained, "When the order has been completed, sir, then I can forget it." One of the diners that day was a psychologist, Bruna Zeignarnik, who some years later published research demonstrating that people had a much better recall of uncompleted tasks than completed ones, a finding that became known as the Zeignarnik effect. When I read this today, I had one of those light bulb moments. I realised that I suffer from the Zeignarnik effect. Every week, for example, I write a column for The Observer. Before writing it, I spend a couple of days reading and thinking about possible topics for next Sunday's column. On the morning of filing day, I have an email exchange or a phone conversation with my editor, in which we bat around the possible topics for the week and make a collective decision. Then I settle down to write, and a few hours later hit send and dispatch the text to the paper. Job done. For years and years, though, I've been irritated by a strange kind of amnesia that then strikes me. Someone, a colleague, perhaps, or a family member, will ask me, what are you writing about next Sunday? And my mind goes blank. I simply cannot remember what it is I've been thinking about for days and writing about a few hours earlier. It's absolutely infuriating. But now I know it's not a sign of early onset dementia. It's just the Zeignarnik effect. One of the unexpected side effects of the pandemic is the way it has cleared my diary. Lots of stuff I was scheduled to do. Meetings, talks, seminars, presentations, dental appointments, and so on, have magically disappeared. And so my interminable to-do list has likewise become correspondingly sparse. And the strange thing is that, to be honest, how relieved I am about some of this. There were, of course, things in my diary that I looked forward to and genuinely wanted to do. But actually, there were also quite a few entries that were there because of duty or loyalty to a colleague or a vague sense of obligation. And now I'm suddenly free to do only what I think is really important or really interesting. So out comes the to-do list, and in no time at all, it begins to look impossibly long again. This is the iron law of to-do lists, by the way. They grow uncontrollably, which is why, ultimately, they're actually a waste of time. That was the great insight that led the management guru Dave Allen to write his landmark book, Getting Things Done. Allen's insight was that the only things that should go on a to-do list are tasks that can be done in the next few minutes. Anything else, and especially things which can't be done until you have done something else first, should be called projects and need to be managed as such. On the basis of this idea, Mr. Allen has built a mighty consulting business. And his book is a Bible for geeks, especially those involved in managing large software projects. I've got a piece of software on my computers which implements Alan's ideas. It's called OmniFocus, and it scolds me regularly because I haven't done some critical task, on the completion of which other tasks depend. I've just looked at its latest complaint. It tells me that later next week I have agreed to give a talk at the launch of a colleague's new book. The task that has to be done before I can prepare my talk is to finish reading the dratted book. Thinking about this diary is nowhere on OmniFocus's bossy agenda. So I better go and focus.